the Sunt Lifting Report. Today I have a lot to share with you. One of those things is going to be on Islam and hate. But this week there's been a ton of news out there, election results and other things that are just overpowering. And what's truly sad, the media is hiding so much from you. When you hear some of the things I'm going to share with you, you'll learn you can't trust major news sources like the Associated Press. But if you haven't figured that out already, I'm going to show you why. That was not the intention at the beginning when I was sketching the show out, but once again, Associated Press has shown themselves as someone you can't trust. Not for the truth. So let's get into this. Today, I'm going to start out, as always, with reading of God's Word, as this is a Christian show, and I always want to start with a reading of God's Word here. We're reading 1 Corinthians 10, 11 to 13. Now, all these things happened unto them for examples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore, let him that thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. There has no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted above that you are able, but will, with the temptation, also make a way to escape that you may be able to bear it. We serve a God that allowed himself to experience life as we do. He came in the person of Jesus, and he was tempted by the devil himself. Verse 12. The second verse I read to you hits at the heart of the man or woman. He thinks it hits at their heart, okay? Why? Because that person who thinks that they're okay standing in their faith, you know, they have to stop and think. When you stand, you must take care and pay attention because there are temptations. You must be wary. But that is all for nothing if your stand is not bolstered by your own delving into the Word of God for devotions or study on a daily basis. You cannot successfully stand against temptations without knowing scriptural responses to those temptations. You do not need to quote scripture, but it can help. You need to know what the Bible says about those things. As believers, we have to desire God's will for us over our own. Add into this a nightly request before you close your eyes at night and saying, Lord, please continue to mold me and make me after your will. Those things can change you. That's the idea, is to change yourself for the better. Dear Lord Jesus, may you be stronger in me today than yesterday. May I continually be strengthened by your word and love. Lord, you grant me many miracles each day. You do special things just to make us smile. You plan for us. We have so much to be thankful for. Lord, help us to resist those things that would pull us away from your desires for our life. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, I want to talk about some of my friends before I get into this. This week, I have been talking with some of my friends, and they are just some incredible people. Who am I talking about? Oh, I've been talking with Usama Dakdak, and I have been talking, something just happened here. Hold on a second. Something just happened to my screen, and I haven't figured out what. Let me just move things. Maybe that'll make it better. And that's not helping. The joy of joy. So let me tell you what's happened. I have an important event coming up this weekend. And what it is this week I will be at the Iron Sharpens Iron Conference in Rochester, New York. I am not speaking. However, I am a vendor there. So I am sharing the good news. What do I mean by that? I am sharing the good news of Christ through sharing my new show and the stuff my show talks about. I talk about the dangers of Islam. I talk about various different things, and I'm going to be sharing all those things with young men and older men. And yeah, I'm kind of excited. I have a chance to do something I have not done in a long time. So, oh, joy of joys. It just seems like everything just decided to jumble up, and I haven't figured out why yet. But we will figure this out. So I want to get into telling you the truth about Islam and why I wrote this book, but this thing. But I want to talk about the two people I talked with this week. Usama Dakdak, I've been spending a little bit more time with, and Julio Negron. These are two evangelists. And they have this strong belief that is overwhelming them, overwhelming everything about them, that they have to share Jesus with everybody. And you know what's exciting? Why? Because they have such a desire to share Christ with others. You know, I stop and I think sometimes about what I am doing. And I think we can all do these things just by how we live, how we set an example for others. That is something we have to start to think about. And that's one of the things I've been working on. How do I show myself as a believer? How do I live? And that's where I'm going to be talking about with Islam and how that is different. So let me talk to you about this chapter that took me forever to write. It's in my book. You can buy it. It is called, the book is called The Cancer, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad. Please do pick it up. I will not put this piece online in a blog. It's very powerful, and I think some people will not be able to handle it. What am I saying? Sometimes the truth hurts. Some people can't handle the truth. And I'd rather have people handle the truth in person. If they want to talk to me, great. We'll do that. I want to talk about this research and how I got to this point to put this out. I could not finish this chapter without talking with several people. And one of them was, one of them is Eric of Kafiristan. Another one, Usama Dakdak. And another person I spoke with, his name is, I'll just call him Jay. And he's a former Muslim who left Islam for Christ. And I have to tell you, it was his patience and understanding and listening to my frustration about this topic of hatred that kind of helped me see how hatred could be somehow exciting for some people, could be tempting. And, you know, that was hard for me to accept. And I have to say that this person, I'm not going to say his name because he did leave Islam and he is a friend of mine. I won't put him at risk, but we talked, and it's amazing, you know, how sometimes listening to somebody helps you get through something difficult. So I want to share this. Now, I wrote this part as an answer to a question. The question is there an Islamic social norm of hatred against all that is non-Muslim? So this is important to grasp why I'm doing this. Why am I addressing this as a social norm? When I started to write this book, I was still a full-time teacher. I was still working in public schools. I wanted to put this out, and I wanted the truth to be known. What are we talking about? Behaviors. So let's think about this. Is there an Islamic behavior? Is there a behavior condoned by Islam, supported by Islam, of hatred against all that is non-Muslim? So here was my research. The United States of America was founded on the belief that people should be able to worship God as they please. The Brownists in England were being persecuted by the Church of England for expressing a disgust towards the church and her leaders for compromising on Christian doctrines. After a period of strife and persecution, they were encouraged to find their way to America on the Mayflower. The USA had many arguments on religion since its colonial days, even an argument about a claim that there exists separation of church and state in the Constitution. It must be noted that the phrase is not in the Constitution, but it can be found in the Communist Manifesto. In Europe, after the period of the Inquisition, countries were tired of persecution because of the religion, and because of religion, fought for freedom of religion. The belief that people should be able to worship as they desire became very important. Unlike citizens in America, Canada, and most of Europe, freedom to worship God in the way you chose is forbidden in most Islamic countries. Worshipping a God other than Allah is often considered illegal. Christians can be charged with shirk, the worst of all crimes under Sharia, the crime of polytheism. This is because Muslims are taught that Christians believe in three gods. The Islamic social norm against freedom of religion was established in the Quran. Quran 385 says, if anyone desires a religion other than Islam, which is submission to Allah, never will it be accepted of him. And in the hereafter, he will be in the ranks of those who have lost all spiritual good. Then again, Quran 3:19. The only religion in the sight of God is Islam. So Islam is an exclusive faith. It not only excludes those of other faiths, it allows for physical attacks, fights, wars, and more as a method of spreading Islam. Islam allows Muslims to unite to stand against the unbelievers. Muhammad, in the Messenger of Allah, and those who are with him are strong against unbelievers, but compassionate against amongst each other. That's Quran 48:29. O prophet, strive hard against the unbelievers and the hypocrites and be firm against them. Their abode is hell, an evil refuge indeed. Quran 9:73. We will cast terror into the hearts of those who disbelieve because they set up with Allah, for which he has sent down no authority. And their abode is the fire, and evil is the abode of the unjust. That's Quran 3:151. And if any believe not in Allah and his messenger, we have prepared for those who reject Allah a blazing fire. Quran 48:13. Now you would think from reading these verses that Islam is engaging in a war against all who are not Muslims. But that is only part of where hatred against others is placed. There is also a hatred against those who call themselves Muslims and are deemed hypocrites. That is why the Great Apostasy, the Riddle Wars, happened before Islamic expansion. Surah 9:73 tells us that Muslims have no problem killing other Muslims whom they deem not Muslim or Islamic enough. Hatred and violence against hypocrites is historically deemed as preferable by Muslims versus engaging in jihad, which is an act of war against non-Muslims. This is because the acts of hatred against hypocrites are seen as an act of purification of Islam. So why is this possible? How could a religion permit attacking their own? You've got to sit there and ask those questions. It does curious. Well, the Quran has the answer. I'm going to read Surah 4:89. It's a little longer than you would expect for a verse. They wish you would disbelieve as they disbelieved, so you would be alike. So do not take from among them allies until they emigrate for the cause of Allah. But if they turn away, then seize them and kill them wherever you find them. And take not from among them any ally or helper, except for those who take refuge with a people between yourselves and whom is a treaty, or those who come to you, their hearts strained at the prospect of fighting you or fighting their own people. And if Allah had willed, he could have given them power over you, and they would have fought you. So if they remove themselves from you and do not fight you and offer you peace, then Allah has not made for you a cause against them. You will find others who wish to obtain security from you and to obtain security from their people. Every time they are returned to the influence of disbelief, they fall back into it. So if they do not withdraw from you or offer you peace or restrain their hand, then seize them and kill them wherever you overtake them. And those we have made for you against them a clear authorization. Again, this is straight from an Islamic source, the Quran. So it is permitted to attack other Muslims they do not consider Islamic enough. Well, that's not enough. Let's keep going. Surah 9, verses 11 to 12. But if they repent, establish prayer, and give zakah, then they are your brothers in religion. And we detail the verses for people who know. And if they break their oaths after their treaty and defame your religion, then fight the leaders of disbelief, for indeed, there are no oaths sacred to them. They might cease. So even hadiths justify killing those who leave Islam if one simply does not agree with one little thing. Let's read this one. This one comes from Buhari, 52-260. This is narrated by Ikrimah. Ali burnt some people, and this news reached Ibn Abbas, who said, had I been in his place, I would not have burnt them. As the prophet said, don't punish anybody with Allah's punishment. No doubt I would have killed them, for the prophet said, if somebody, a Muslim, discards their religion, kill him. Oh, so the method of death wasn't wrong. It was the method of death. It wasn't the act itself that this guy got upset with. Think about it. Well, let me read you another hadith. This is Sahih Bukhari, 6923. Narrated Abu Barda. Abu Musa said, I come to the prophet along with two men from the tribe of Ashirian, one on my right and the other on my left. While Allah's apostle was brushing his teeth with a swak, and both men asked him for some employment, the prophet said, O Abu Musa, O Abdullah bin Qais, I said, tell me what was in their hearts, and I did not feel or realize that they were seeking employment. As if I were looking now at his sawak being drawn to a corner of his lips, and he said, we never, or we do not, appoint for our affairs anyone who seeks to be employed. But O Abu Musa, or Abdullah bin Qais, go to Yemen. The prophet then sent Mu'ad bin Jabal after him. And when Mu'ad reached him, he spread out a cushion for him and requested him to get down and sit on the cushion. Behold, there was a fettered man beside Abu Musa. And Mu'ad asked, who is this man? Abu Musa said, he was a Jew and became a Muslim, and then reverted back to Judaism. Then Abu Musa requested Mu'ad to sit down. But Mu'ad said, I will not sit down until he has been killed. This is the judgment of Allah and his apostle for such cases, and repeated it three times. Then Abu Musa ordered that the man be killed, and he was killed. Abu Musa added, then we discussed the night prayers, and one of us said, I pray in sleep, and I hope that Allah will reward me for my sleep as well as for my prayers. So this apostate was put to death without a second thought. It was so easy for them to perform the act that they talk about Allah rewarding them. If it is easy to kill those who leave Islam, how easy is it to demand such a thing for other religions? Under the first caliph, Abu Bakr, those who did not want to pay at a certain time were attacked. These acts of violence are seen as uniting Islam. Comes from, again, from Bukhari, Sahih al-Bukhari, 657. The prophet said, no prayer is harder for the hypocrites than the Fajr and the Isha prayers. And if they knew the reward for these prayers and the respective times, they would certainly present themselves in the mosque, even if they had to crawl. The prophet added, certainly, I decided to order that Mu'ad bin, the call maker, to pronounce Iqamah and order a man to lead the prayer and then take a fire flame to burn all those who had not left their houses so far for the prayer along with their houses. Are these things happening today? Is Islam killing off those who leave it, or disgrace with Islam in one slight way? If so, they might be teaching hatred of all that is not Islamic. That would mean that anyone and anything not Islamic enough should receive no respect. Could this be why presidential candidate Donald Trump stated, I think Islam hates us? Was Donald Trump right about Islam in 2016? There are hadiths that discuss the refusal to allow others to believe differently about God. It has been narrated by, okay, I'm just going to read this. This is by Sahih Muslim, Hadith 1767. It has been narrated by Umar bin al-Khatib that he heard the messenger of Allah say, it has been narrated by Umar that he heard the messenger of Allah say, I will expel the Jews and Christians from the Arabian Peninsula and will not leave any but Muslim. Oh, so again, this hatred is encouraged. And it's in the Hadith. So they won't allow anybody else who is not Islamic there. Are you hearing hatred? So this can be viewed in a simpler manner. Does Islam teach hatred of other religions? Does it teach disrespect towards any who hold any other belief other than a belief in Muhammad and his God, Allah? If you don't believe it, please reread the Hadith I just read. Again, that's Sahih Muslim, Hadith 1767. If you want to reread it, great. So if it teaches hatred of other religions, would it then teach hatred of those who leave Islam? Islam requires those who leave it to be labeled apostates. Apostates can be killed under Sharia. The Islamic doctrine of Awala Wala Bara, mentioned, which I write about earlier in the book, in chapter 3, which I'm going to tell people, you definitely want to pick up this book if you have not read it. Again, the book is called The Cancer of Civilization Jihad. All right, you can buy this on Amazon. It's one of the ways you can support my work. So this doctrine of Awala Wala Bara can also be translated as loving and hating. According to Raymond Ibrahim, this is how he interpreted it. In January of 2020, the two jihadis that stabbed and killed two police officers in Russia released a picture of themselves holding their knives before going on jihad. Underneath, they wrote, quote, love and hatred is based on Tawheed, oneness of Allah. This oneness is both loving and hating, according to his teaching. Sounds like Raymond Ibrahim was right. This claim that hatred is based on their God Allah is something often overlooked as impossible to accept by the rest of the world. Even though the Quran has been around for over 1,000 years, very few have looked at it and examined it for how much it teaches and embraces a culture of hatred of those outside the faith and only a love for those inside. And again, that love only extends as far as they allow it. I mean, if they consider someone slightly off, they lose that love. Daily prayers are immersed in teaching this hatred through rote memorization and repetition of Surah 1, which Muslim children learn at an early age, which all Muslims repeat up to 17 times in their 5 daily prayers. Keep that number in mind. We're going to talk about that. Surah 1 says this, in the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful, all praise is due to Allah, Lord of the worlds, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful, sovereign of the day of recompense. It is you we worship and you we ask for help. Guide us to the straight path, the path of those upon whom you have bestowed favor, not of those who have evoked your anger or of those who are astray. This last verse, verse 7, refers to those who have evoked your anger or those who are astray. Who are those two groups? The answer is in another English translation of the Quran. Moshin Khan's translation of verse 7 reads this. The way of those on whom you have bestowed your grace, not the way of those who have earned your anger, such as the Jews, nor of those who went astray, such as the Christians. So teachers understand the importance of repetition when teaching new concepts. Zig Ziglar said, repetition is the mother of learning, the father of action, which makes it the architect of accomplishment. 17 repetitions each day about those who have earned hatred and those who have gone astray is only touching on the teaching and training of hatred in Islamic culture. Anthony Robbins said, repetition is the mother of skill. Those involved in law enforcement and the military understand the importance of this phrase. They practice something 2,500 times to make sure their reactions are instinctive. not reactive. So, hon, let's talk about those 17 prayers, 7 days a week. Okay, 7 days a week. I'm not even multiplying them by five here. 17 prayers times 7 days. It's 119 prayers a week. Okay, 119 prayers times 4 weeks. That's 476 prayers a month. 476 prayers times 12 months. It's 5,712 repetitions of this prayer that encourages hatred towards Jews and Christians. Think about it. Now, the truth is we have to multiply that by five. I'm not even getting into that. Five times five, 25. We're talking about 25,000. These are the prayers that teach Muslims that God hates Jews and that Christians have abandoned their God. But it is only of one chapter. It's only one chapter in the Quran. Only one. Moshe Khan's translation of Surah 2, chapter 2, verses 8 to 9, 14 is also, and verse 14 is also of interest. This is what the Quran says here, according to Moshe Khan. And of mankind, there are some hypocrites who say, we believe in Allah and the last day. While in fact they believe not, they think to deceive Allah and those who believe. While they only deceive themselves and perceive it not. And when they meet those who believe, they say, we believe. But when they are alone with their Satan, or Shaitan, as they say, devils, polytheists, hypocrites, etc., they say, truly, we are with you. Verily, we were but mocking. So this passage allows for distrust, even of other Muslims. Not only distrust, but a reason for anger. Sadly, this creates a paranoia, wondering who amongst the followers of Allah should not be trusted and must be excluded from among not only Islam itself, but each and every gathering of Muslims. Hatred against those who are not Muslim is idealized in Surah 58:22. According to Moshe Khan's translation, it reads, you, O Muhammad, will not find any people who believe in Allah and the last day, making friendship with those who oppose Allah and his messenger, Muhammad, even though they were their fathers or their sons or their brothers or their kindred people. For such he has written faith in their hearts and strengthened them with rough proofs, light and true guidance from himself. And we will admit them to gardens, paradise, under which rivers flow, to dwell therein forever. Allah is pleased with them and they with him. They are the party of Allah. Verily, it is the party of Allah that will be successful. Think about that. Ibn Kathir, a commentator on the Quran, says that this verse has a secret meaning. Are you catching this? A secret meaning. Wow, let's think about that. Let's think about that. He says, quote, Allah is well pleased with them, and they are well pleased with him. It contains a beautiful secret. When the believers become enraged against their relatives and kindred in Allah's cause, he compensated them by being pleased with them. So it's okay if you get angry with your relatives who are also Islamic enough, so Allah's okay with you getting angry with them? He doesn't. And this is, yeah, this is where it gets important to understand. This act, this favors the concept of honor killing. Hatred seems embedded in this faith of Islam. When they teach children about Islam, they teach concepts like who is a real Muslim and who is a kafir. Before going beyond and defining Islam, this can be found in a textbook for 7th grade students in Islamic schools in America titled What Islam is All About by Yahya Emmerich. This book states on page 56, a person who rejects the message of the Shahada is called a kafir. The word comes from an Arabic term, kafara, which means to cover up or hide something. A kafir is a person who covers up the truth and tries to hide it. A truth hider. Whether it's through laziness, outright rebellion, or simple ignorance, the person who does not even make the effort to obey what Allah has ordained can never be counted among the believers. They are the ones who will be unhappy in this life and punished in the next because they are false to their inner nature. Wow. That is, and it comes from, here's their quote, it comes from Surah 7, 182 to 183. And this is a textbook for seventh graders. Let's go on. I want to tell you what verse, chapter 7, verse 182 to 183 says. And this is significant. The standard English translation states, but those who deny our signs, we will progressively lead them to destruction from where they do not know. And I will give them time. Indeed, my plan is firm. Let's see what Motion Khan says about this verse. Again, this is chapter 7, 182 to 183. He put it this way. Those who reject our ayat, proofs, evidences, verses, lessons, signs, revelations, etc., we shall gradually seize them with punishment in ways they perceive not, and I respite them. Certainly, my plan is strong. This means that Allah does not love the person who does not believe. In fact, he seems to do the opposite in hate. So what about Muslims? Are all those who consider themselves Muslims safe from being in trouble and called a kafir? Yahya Emmerich tells seventh grade American Muslims, if a person thinks that they are Muslim, but they have no faith in Islamic teachings and make no effort to make an Islamic learning and practices part of their life, then they're not Muslim at all. While this section continues and tells children not to call non-Muslim kafirs and tells them to reason unbelievers in a superior manner, it has taught them to disrespect and despise the non-Muslim. Even a Muslim who is not Islamic enough should be thought of as not Muslim. Wow. This again sets the stage for honor killings. This is what I've been talking about, this hatred in Islam. When children or relatives decide not to obey the Sharia, there is a penalty that can be paid. Death. In American law, murder is a crime punishable by death in some states. The laws have some exceptions, one of them being self-defense. In Sharia, murder is a capital crime for which there are also allowances. Here are four of them. This should shock you. Okay. First one makes sense. A child or an insane person under any circumstances. That makes perfect sense. Okay. Second one. A Muslim for killing a non-Muslim. If that doesn't leave you asking questions, catch this next one. A Jewish or Christian subject of the Islamic State for killing an apostate from Islam. Because a subject of the state is under its protection while killing an apostate from Islam without consequences. Now this last one should horrify you if nothing else has yet. Again, these are exceptions to the death penalty for murder. In Islam, that's the penalty. It is death when you commit murder. So what is the fourth exception to that rule? According to Sharia, according to Umdat Salik, Al-Salik, you can find this in Reliance the Traveler. You can find it 01.2. And if you're looking for a page number, it's page 582. Or mother. Or their fathers or mothers. For killing their offspring or offspring's offspring. Yeah. One such honor killing India a few days before this part of the book was written. On August 5th of 2020, in Karcha village in Mathandunda, not far from Uttar Pradesh, India, a 19-year-old woman and her alleged boyfriend were caught in a, quote, compromising position. That's all it says, compromising position. No one explains what that is. The family members locked them in the hut. Their family members. And set it on fire. In Islam, a compromising position can be simply being with a member of the opposite sex who's not a family member. Supervision. Please think about that. It could be that they were caught kissing. That is why the news article does not define the term. The moment these two were caught not being an example of Islam, they were condemned as not being Islamic enough and executed. Hatred is sown and cultivated in Islam against all that is not Islamic to such an extent that even family members must die if they are not Islamic enough. This is a judgment that they have left Islam. Thus, they are guilty of apostasy. Crime for, what does Sharia say about apostasy? 08.0, apostasy from Islam, ridda. Leaving Islam is the ugliest form of unbelief, kufar, and the worst. It may come about through sarcasm, as when someone is told, trim your nails, it is sunnah, and he replies, I would not do it even if it were, as opposed to when some circumstances exist which exonerate him of having committed apostasy, such as when his tongue runs away with him, or when he is quoting someone, or says it out of fear. Let's go on. 08.1. When a person who has reached the age of puberty and is sane voluntarily apostatizes from Islam, he deserves. The wording in Sharia here allows accusations to quickly give rise to condemnation in a death sentence, such as the excuse given for many an honor killing. A wife, daughter, or son has disobeyed Allah by not obeying Sharia, and thus the parent is justified by killing them. In Germany, honor killings have gone from something you read in the news from Pakistan to something you can now see while riding the bus to work. On July 6th of 2020, Albrechtsberg, what was known as a quiet town, a 37-year-old Afghan migrant killed his wife with a knife right on the bus in front of everyone before running off. See, under Sharia, she had no right to leave him, but she had legally, under German law, that right. That was all he needed to take her life, a violation of Sharia. On September 5th, 2019, in King's Crossing, a subdivision in Corpus Christi, Texas, South Side, a 72-year-old Muhammad Sahih killed his daughter and grandson and brutally beat to the edge of death his other grandson. He quickly confessed to the crime after the brutal murder. It is thought that he viewed this as an honor killing. This horrible crime of honor killing is thought to now occur in the United Kingdom 12 times a year. Soren Kern tracked 30 honor killings in Germany in the first 5 months of 2017. A 2014 study done by the Department of Justice in the United States of America before the massive hijra into Europe and North America in 2015 had some surprising estimates. On August 21st of 2020, Le Parisien posted an article about a 17-year-old Muslim girl who fell in love with a 20-year-old man they called a Christian. And they moved in with him. She moved in with him. They went to her visitor parents because she missed them. They assaulted her. They shaved her head. They broke her ribs and would have continued further and killed her, but the young man who came with her broke free and grabbed local law enforcement. The numerous bruises around her ears say everything about their murderous intention of these parents' actions of hatred against their daughter who was not Islamic enough. The parents were charged with violence against a minor in France. Under Sharia, this would not be a crime. The parents did not see what they did as something wrong. On August 26th of 2020, Yasser Abdel Said was captured after 12 years on the run because of murder of your children as a crime in America. This heinous murder and his eluding the police put him on the top 10 wanted list of the FBI in December of 2014. Yasser Said shot and killed his teenage daughters, Amina, who was 18, and Sarah, 17, while taking them for a ride in his taxi under the pretense of getting something to eat. This act of violence was not the first one they had received at the hand of their father. Allegations of physical and sexual abuse were made by Amina and Sarah against their father to the police before their mother made the choice to flee with the girls in 2007. Amina even told others her dad would kill her if he could. Their mother, Tissy, returned to their father after not even a year apart. Dr. Phyllis Chesler, noted scholar and warrior for the rights of those suffering from Islamic gender apartheid, along with the girl's aunt, believed that Tissy took part in an elaborate ruse to trick the girls into seeing their father, knowing full well he would kill them, given the chance. What had they done to warrant such hatred and evil from their father and mother? Part of this begins from birth, with the devaluing of Islamic females from birth. I talk about this earlier in the book. Again, if you're interested in buying this book and learning more about these evils, these evil behaviors in Islam, again, please go to Amazon, purchase The Cancer of Civilization Jihad. What did these girls do? They were dating boys who were not Muslims. In their father's mind, made them apostates. Since such a thing is forbidden to Muslim women under Sharia, it brought shame on the family, since women are property to Muslims. This hatred extends to killing those who claim to be Muslims and are not in their view. The charge of blasphemy is a death sentence. Blasphemy charges in countries like Pakistan can even be leveled against American citizens. Tahir Ahmad Nassim moved to America in 1978. He was of the Ahmadiyya sect of Muslims, which is a highly persecuted and not accepted by any Muslim group for several reasons. Nassim was sharing his religious views on YouTube in America. People in Pakistan sent him an invitation in 2018 to debate his claims of being a prophet if he would come. He accepted. The trap was set. And he went on to find himself quickly arrested and charged with blasphemy. For 2 years, Tahir Nassim was in jail awaiting his trial. His lawyer was reported to have communicated a likely win because they had no evidence. But on July 29, 2020, the day Nassim was finally going to get this trial and possibly be set free to return to the USA, a 15-year-old boy entered the courtroom and shot him several times, claiming he killed Nassim in defense of Islam. This hatred of anything non-Muslim can be seen in what happened shortly after. On August 10th of 2020, it's not even a full month later, The Wire out of Indonesia reported that Faisal Khan, a 15-year-old Pakistani, beams for selfies with lawyers and police. Thousands hail him in the streets as a warrior. You know, one would think that this hatred of all that is not Islamic would surface quietly and be able to be seen easily. Europe is seeing that since the Great Hijra in 2015. Numerous churches and synagogues have been attacked and defaced. On August 20th of 2020, Sputnik, a Russian news source, posted an article on a Muslim migrant from Somalia having confessed to setting fires to two churches in Norway because someone set fire to a Quran. Could have been a Muslim, but that's okay. It would justify. Yeah. The result was over 2.2 million in damages. The culture of hatred is attractive to people who find themselves behind bars and get there with a sense of anger and hatred against the world for whatever injustice they believe exists in the world. In the words of one ex-Muslim whom I will call Jay, who helped me understand this, and who I owe a lot to for my understanding of this Islamic hatred, Jay said this. He's talking about the attraction posed by the hatred and anger in Islam to those in prison. Jay said, it seems it had a special appeal for me, the anger. I've seen a lot of other brothers who were angry, who were Muslim, and I felt like I would be part of something. And by joining them, I would be angry too. And then we would just walk around in our kufis and our prayer rugs looking tough, you know, and people would leave us alone because they were afraid of us. You know, Patrick Dunleavy writes about the conversion of men to Islam in the New York State prison system in his book, The Fertile Soil of Jihad, Terrorism's Prison Connection, 2011, which I do recommend that everybody buy. Dunleavy was the Inspector General of the Criminal Intelligence Unit of the New York State Bureau of Corrections Services. Dunleavy was a key figure in Operation Hades that exposed elements of an Islamic terror network that utilized prisons. So, again, if you want to learn more about these conversions, that's one place you can go. Now, this is only the tip of the iceberg, people. Throughout Western civilization, Islamic organizations such as the Muslim Council of Britain, in America, the Council of American Islamic Relations, ISNA, I can go on and on, in the International Institute of Islamic Thought. Again, there's so many organizations, ISNA, ICNA. There's like 30 or 40 organizations I can tell you that are directly connected to this, but let me keep going. They're actively working to prevent an equal voice from other religions. Worse is that they are preventing factual information from being shared and, in essence, making them public, ignorant of what Islam believes and teaches. Here's the thing I'm going to tell you. I didn't even talk about freedom of speech. That's in a previous chapter in this book. Some of this stuff, it just seems so hard to believe. And if it doesn't shock you, something's wrong. I have a hard time, a really hard time working on this section of the book. Why? Because I grew up with a family where my mother and father taught me what love was. They taught me that family came first, and they taught me we should do things for love. I grew up in a time where you did things for your neighbor out of love. You did things not out of selfishness, because it was the right thing to do, again, out of love. You did things because it was the Christian thing to do. In Islam, that does not exist. They only are allowed to have love for each other, but only to the point where, again, they can't even trust each other. This is a problem. When you can't trust, I mean, if someone may say you, I mean, at any point, someone may say, You're not Islamic enough. You're not Muslim enough. They can say that, and now you could be an apostate, and you risk your life. Someone gets mad at you, can say those things. It only takes one. And no matter how many times I really had a hard time writing that section. And it's one of the reasons why you'll never see it on a blog. It was hard to write. So it's in a book. And you just heard it. So if you want to hear it, please replay. And this stuff isn't easy. It's never easy to talk about hatred. But I think that this is important. What is the difference? In Christianity, a radical Christian will go out and tell you about the love of Christ. They'll tell you about the overwhelming love of Christ. So much that even while you were yet sinners, even while I was still a sinner, did this, he did these things for us while we were yet in our sin. He did this for us. This is the overwhelming love of God for us. There is no overwhelming love in Islam. There's no overpowering love. And Allah only cares for those who are true devotees. He has no love of the non-Muslim. Oh, so why convert? Because Allah didn't love you. Does that mean he'll love you? I mean, what if you choose to do something he doesn't consider Islamic enough? This is the religion of works. And another time we'll talk about jihad. But again, some of these things are just hard to get into, unfortunately, and difficult. And I say this, having written of Islam, it was the hardest one I've ever written, the longest one. But yeah. So let's talk about some of the reality of what you've just heard. Reality isn't always pretty, and it's never quite what we want. And I think everybody pretty much gets that. So right now in the United States, we're facing some of these problems that are related to this topic I just read. And it's one of the reasons I chose to talk about this tonight. And I have to thank Robert Spencer for, again, bringing stuff like this to the limelight. I love Robert Spencer's work. And if you can, you have extra money floating around, throw it towards Jihad Watch. Definitely one of those organizations that could definitely use your income. Your donations. Let me read something Robert Spencer put out this week. And I want to talk about this again before I get into it. Is religious, you know, I don't know if you're aware, but Biden, when he was running for president, he asked for jihad. He called for jihad. This is a guy who I personally believe has dementia. You know, I can get that he would do whatever he's told to do. But whoever wrote this, because I don't believe Biden wrote it, had him calling for jihad. Now, I want you to think about that. If you are running for president, is that the thing you would want to do? Probably not. So what kind of a president calls for jihad? Well, it could be a man who would put a religious freedom advisor in, who is a follower of Islam. Now, with what I just taught you about Islam and the social norm of teaching hatred, this is something to think about. Can we trust that a man who has no belief in religious freedom, can we trust he would even do what is right for Christians, Jews, or anybody who's not Islamic? This is the important question that Robert Spencer asked in PJ Media. I think you've got to hear this article, and I think it's incredibly well written. He writes, old Joe Biden's handlers have chosen Rashad Hussein, who served during Obama's first two terms as U.S. Special Envoy to the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, to succeed former Senator Sam Brownback as U.S. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom. Hussein went before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee last week for a perfunctory hearing. But as increasingly the case in Washington these days, the most important question at hand wasn't asked. Oh. So now a group dedicated to protecting embattled Christians worldwide, Save the Persecuted Christians organization, along with a number of allied groups and individuals, is asking them of Hussein directly. The group on Monday sent Hussein an open letter signed by notables, including Frank Gaffney of the Center for Security Policy, Baroness of Caroline Cox of the House of Lords, retired Air Force Colonel Michael Onsick, radio host Eric Metaxas, Juliana Tamaruzzi of the Iraqi Christian Relief Council, Amy Bean, author of The Last Yazidi Genocide, and many others. The letter asked Hussein pointed questions about Sharia, which is entirely justified given the fact that Hussein is clearly a devout and Sharia-adherent Muslim, and Sharia quite clearly denies equality of rights to non-Muslims. Is there any sense in putting someone who doesn't believe in religious freedom as a person over religious freedom? No. When Biden appointed Hussein as his ambassador to the – sorry, this Obama – when Obama appointed Hussein as ambassador to the OIC back in 2010, Barack Obama proudly noted that his appointee was a Hafiz of the Quran. That is, that he had memorized the entire Islamic holy book. That means he had memorized passages declaring that non-Muslims are the most vile of created beings, Quran 98:6. That Christians who believe that Jesus is the Son of God are under the curse of Allah, Quran 9:30. And that Allah transformed disobedient Jews into apes and pigs. That's in Quran 2:63-65 and chapter 5:59-60 in 7. Chapter 7, verse 166, Hussein has likewise lovingly committed to memory the passages enjoining Muslims to fight against those who do not believe in Allah or the last day, and do not forbid what Allah and his messenger have forbidden, and do not follow the religion of truth, even if they are among the people of the book, that is Jews and Christians, until they pay the jizya with willing submission and feel themselves subdued. Quran 9:29. None of that necessarily means that Hussein, as ambassador for international religious freedom, will slight reports of Islamic entities denying religious freedom to Christians or others. He may have some understanding of such Quranic passages that blunts their literal force. However, every nation that claims to implement Sharia today, including Iran, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and Afghanistan, denies religious freedom in varying degrees to non-Muslims, as well as to Muslims who are considered heterodox, which they just don't agree, basically. If Hussein believes that Sharia is the unalterable and perfect law of Allah, does he even believe that non-Muslims should have equality of rights in such countries? These are important questions. Accordingly, and Robert Spencer continues, accordingly, the letter asks Hussein, in light of differences in the understanding of personal rights and freedoms under Sharia rules versus those protected under international law concerning human rights and religious freedom, what standard would you advocate for when issues affecting the freedom of non-Muslims to practice their faith, especially Muslim-majority nations, if confirmed as ambassador at large for international religious freedom? And since Hussein previously served as ambassador to the OIC, the letter asks, Sharia law is sometimes permit faithful Muslims to punish and even kill those who blaspheme against Islam. In your testimony before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, you professed a commitment to work against blasphemy laws. Yet the OIC historically has championed such laws as part of the efforts to criminalize criticism of Islam. If confirmed as the ambassador, again, religious freedom ambassador, wow. Think about this. The question is, would you expressly reject the OIC's Sharia blasphemy agenda and seek the repeal of blasphemy laws worldwide? What do you think his answer will be? Robert Spencer continues. Then there is a question of Hussein's ties to the Muslim Brotherhood, which works internationally, pose, and support Sharia governments. Back in December of 2012, according to the Investigative Project on Terrorism, the Egyptian magazine Rose Al-Yosef published a triumphant article naming six Obama officials, including Hussein himself, who had turned the Obama White House from a position hostile to Islamic groups and organizations in the world to the largest and most important supporter of the Muslim Brotherhood. Yes, friends, that is, after all, who Hussein is. Rashad Hussein is Muslim Brotherhood. In 2012, Rashad Hussein helped perpetuate the notorious Obama White House false narrative about the Benghazi Jihad massacre, claiming that it was not the result of spontaneous anger over YouTube. They're claiming that it was the result of spontaneous anger of a YouTube video. Yeah, we know better. What was his purpose? And should he be trusted? I would say no. But that's me. Let's go on and talk about the results of things this week. Let's talk about the elections for a moment. And I want to move towards other things because the hatred of Islam is overpowering. But I'll go back to that in a bit with more news. Let's talk about what's happening here in the States. So the elections happen, and you're going to see the changes that are happening that are more Republican than Democrat in some areas, where the results, according to James Cavill, their lib extraordinaire planner for the Democratic Party, he blamed the removal of the Virginia governor as it was their own fault. He says it was the idiocy of their wokeness. You know, I don't agree with James Cavill very often, but this time I do. I saw an article in Epic Times on that, and I just had to laugh because, you know what? He's right. It was their idiocy. It was their blatant honesty. It was their stupidity that promoted communist agenda to cause splits in people. So, I mean, this there is one school district in Virginia that supported the gay agenda so much that it allowed anyone to use the bathroom or a locker by how they feel, not who they are biologically. The school district went so far as to hide sexual assaults and that includes a rape. And on top of this, the other reason that parents all over the country are man fighting, critical race theory. Being forced on kids as young as kindergartners all the way through seniors in high school. Well, they have a new governor of Virginia now. Glenn Youngkin. That's good. Let's talk about critical race theory for a minute. I'm going to be having someone join me in one of the next, hopefully this week coming up. I want to have Jennifer Fonseca come join me. Just me tonight. Annie, sorry I didn't catch you earlier. Just me tonight. I have been sharing so much on CRT, but not enough. And here's the thing that bothers me this week. Really has me angry. I am a retired New York State teacher. I taught for 20 years in the school district. And they put out an article in their union paper The NYSU paper. NYSU paper is called NYSU United. Well, this is for the November, December issue. I'm just going to show it to everybody if you can pick this up. This is the. You can see us on the YouTube. It says, "We are in this together." That's the title of this one. But they lie to the teachers. They start out with something called teach the truth. Well, that's something every teacher should always do. And then they say, the next headline is, getting the facts about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Did you hear those words? Let's talk about them. When they say them generally, they say diversity, inclusion, and equity. DIE means die. So educators figured that out. They can't put them in that order. And that's one of the things I find humorous. You know, when they always put equity last. It doesn't work. It's a bad acronym. So the acronym they use is DEI. Think about it. So there's an article here written by Kara Smith of NYSU. She writes, the term critical race theory is everywhere these days, dominating school board meetings, making headlines, and inspiring vigorous debate in many communities. The issue has many educators wondering, what exactly is CRT? And how does it impact my teaching? The answer is simple. It doesn't. Whoa. Okay. So you're telling me that there are no standards written about this? How come I can find them on NYSU, on New York State Education, in the New York State Education Department? See, that's the thing that's been out there in the news this week. I got this article before Election Day, a week ago. And that is what I've been hearing in the responses in the news, where they're upset. Well, it's all made up, that, you know, the CRT stuff's made up. No, it's not. Go to your state education department site. In New York State, it's NYSED.gov. Go there. Look for standards related to diversity, inclusion, and equity. Just type those three words in. You're going to find, again, standards are what's required to be taught. Frameworks are given in this. Take a look at it. All right, they've been downloadable since this summer. This is important to understand. So they are out there lying to you, and it takes somebody like me and somebody like Jennifer Fonseca and others to tell you the truth, because the news is not telling you that. Sadly, people like me have to do these type of shows because the news lies. Oh, and wait till I get into what Associated Press did this week. Wow. To say that there is no CRT, that it's all made up, is a lie from the pit of hell, people. I just read a story from Virginia. And there's a video that goes with it, which I'm not going to play tonight, where a young woman with a six-year-old girl, her six-year-old came home and asked if she was evil because she had a white skin. Can you imagine being the parent having to answer that question? And you would definitely want to know who told you that, who told that six-year-old the white skin is a sign of being evil. You would want that teacher removed. I know I would. But that is in the state curriculum. What will it take to end it? That's another question. Will it take the governor? Again, this is part of the issue with education. People don't understand this. What has to happen here? They have to fire the Board of Regents because they approved it. It doesn't require a state law. It doesn't require state approval. It doesn't require an executive board. it requires the governor of the state to remove these people. Now, can he do it? Does he have the authority? It depends on your state, but it should be done. The people should be rising up against their state board of regents wherever this has been implemented. Get everyone removed. Everyone that you can find that voted yes for this. That's the thing that has to be done. Christians, Jews, believers and lovers in liberty, you have to stand up against this. That's on you. I'm doing what I can to keep you informed. You have to stand up. Now, we're waiting to see what happens in New Jersey. At least I haven't heard yet that there's been a change in New Jersey. I think the election, from what I hear, has been extremely close. At one point, I heard the Republican was ahead. And at another point, I heard the Democrat was ahead. I heard about cheating initially. And again, you listen. The one that got me in New Jersey, which I found interesting, was Project Veritas's video where they sent a guy in to see if he could vote. And the guy told them he's not a citizen. And they still wanted to give him the ability to vote. That's illegal, people. Would you like somebody being able to vote in your neighborhood that believed things that people in your neighborhood don't, to try and change your neighborhood? That happened years and years ago here in this country. We refer to it as Mississippi Burning. So let's keep that in mind. This is another reason why non-citizens should not vote. All right. Now, despite all the madness, Biden has pursued his agenda of forced vaccination mandates and is facing a serious backlash. Again, you won't find this in your daily news. Sadly, stations like CNN, MSNBC think it's important that you don't know that people are fighting what's considered unconstitutional mandates. People, these mandates violate your constitutional rights. Now, the election is over. The gloves are off. This is going to be a court battle royale. These rights I'm speaking of, the Constitution calls your God-given rights, guaranteed by the Constitution. Okay. That's what the Constitution says. It is your God-given rights. Okay, so where am I getting this battle royale from? Whoa. If you don't subscribe to Epoch Times, I'm going to suggest you do. I love this article. Phillips wrote an article that's titled Lawsuits Pile Up After White House Sets COVID-19 Vaccine Mandate Deadline. And in the article, he talks about numerous lawsuits having been filed against the Biden administration over vaccine mandates for private employers and federal contractors that are set to be published in the Federal Register tomorrow. Again, attorney generals of Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee announced they would take legal action against the White House. This is happening, people. And they've filed a lawsuit in a bid to challenge President Joe Biden, affecting federal contractors. Can they be stopped? Now, we will see. There's a lot going on. I'm concerned. Can this be stopped? Now, Joe Biden is trying to do this through the Occupation Safety and Health Administration by making rules, federal rules, that must be followed. Now, this is going to be interesting. I live in Libland, New York State. In California, they'd probably be okay with these rules. But most of the rest of the country, no. And in most of New York State, believe it or not, the answer is no. In New York City and most of the inner cities, most of the city urban areas in New York State, they'd probably be okay. Once you hit into the rest of the state, any other part of the state besides those urban areas, they don't like this. In fact, the parents really don't like this because their children, when you think about it, they're starting to talk about children being forced to be vaccinated. And this is where the bad earth information is really going to get interesting. Wait till I share this next one with you. I have to say I'm sad that most news sources are not sharing important information. You have to go to something like Epoch Times. I'm going to keep recommending it. It's worth subscribing to. It's worth paying for. Epoch Times revealed this week that there's a vaccination battle, a large hitch that's being kept from the public. And you know what's sad here? What's truly sad? People like me who read VAERS data are not surprised. But I know a lot of people who are so convinced that there is nothing wrong with the vaccine. They just believe everything they're told. Zachary Stiber wrote an article that was updated today on researchers calling for a halt on COVID-19 vaccines for pregnant women after a reanalysis of a CDC study. Now, let me tell you why people who read VAERS data should know this. When you go to cdc.gov and you type in VAERS and you download the information into an Excel spreadsheet, select, when you go to the column that says death, select the Y as an answer. You can sort it and filter it. So sort it by the answer yes for death. Then sort from youngest to oldest. It will horrify you, sicken you, make you angry, make you want to throw things, and vomit all at once. Why am I saying that? There is obvious evidence in the VAERS data that pregnant women and nursing mothers should never receive this gene therapy that is called a vaccine. When someone comes home after getting a vaccination, breastfeeds their child and the child dies, isn't that cause enough to pull this vaccination, which is a gene therapy, from the market? I mean, that one alone, again, if you read VAERS data, I'm always asking people to do this. Why am I asking you to do this? Because stop trusting people like me. Stop trusting the news. Do the work yourself, because you can't trust anymore. You have to do the work yourself. You have to find out these truths, and as painful, as hurting as they are, they do make you want to cry. They do make you sick. They do make you want to hit something. I think that this stuff is being hidden from you. Well, let me ask you, if it's hidden, when you can easily access the information, all you have to do is go to cdc.gov. Up in the top, you'll see on the right, you'll see a little area, and you can write in V-A-E-R-S for that little search area. And then you can download this as an Excel spreadsheet. People, do that today. Now, there are over 16,000 dead from this vaccine. According to VAERS data, research by the CDC that indicates that VAERS data is only 1% of reality. It's not what I'm saying. Again, go check out the CDC statement on VAERS. They claim it's 1%. That means more people have been killed by the vaccination. Again, if I'm listening to CDC correctly, go find out for yourself. Don't trust me. If that's true, what are we doing? Now, this stuff brings to memory an attempt by Dr. Peter McCullough recently and others to review the data of the FDA claims that that was used to approve the gene therapy as a vaccine. What am I talking about? Last month, not even a full month ago, they requested to review the data. You know what happened? Using a Freedom of Information Act, which is a standard form, I've filled out hundreds of these. And they were denied. We're talking about men of science, medical doctors, medical professionals who were denied the right to review the data. What's the FDA hiding? Why won't they let medical professionals review the data? That should have everyone worried. What's in the data that they're afraid to share with Dr. Peter McCullough and other professionals, other medical professionals? I'm really concerned here. Things keep going here. I have a lot more to share, and I don't have that much time here. Let's talk about parents of college and universities across the country for now. There are mandates all over the place. This next article that I want to talk to you about, it was in the Washington Free Beacon. I love the Washington Free Beacon. I don't know if you do, but again, I recommend it. But parents of children in colleges and universities across the country and parents of those soon to be in college should be entitled to know what foreign countries are influencing education at schools where their children are going or intending to go. Now, who has been in on this the most? Well, there are organizations that have been exposing this. One is the Clarion Project. Another is the Middle East Forum. They've been exposing this for quite a long time. What am I talking about? I'm talking about for the past, 5 to 7 years that organizations like Clarion Project and Middle East Forum have been exposing this. Now, the Washington Free Beacon gets a hold of this. They put it out and titled an article, "Most American Parents Are Unaware. China, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar are major donors to U.S. universities." Adam Credo is one of those guys who gets the truth out. I love him. I love his work. And Washington Free Beacon, if you can give this guy a raise, please do. And please give him more kudos because he does excellent work. He writes the Clarion Project wrote about this. The Middle East Forum wrote about this. Center for Security Policy was actually doing something on this too at one point. It's talking about parents being unaware that China, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar are the top financiers of American universities and are worried that foreign cash is influencing what your children are learning in the classroom at colleges and universities across America? You should be. Nearly 60% of parents interviewed in a September poll said they were not aware of what countries are major donors to U.S. universities. The poll was commissioned by the Lawfare Project. Again, here's another organization that's been involved with this. We should be, if your child is going to a college or a university, don't you think you should know if a possible enemy of the United States, I'm not saying, the only one I'm not saying Saudi Arabia is an enemy. But again, promotion of Wahhabism, it can't be trusted. Their promotion of Islam, it can't be trusted. Are things changing in Saudi Arabia? Well, I'm going to be doing an interview pretty soon on that topic. Are there things we should celebrate? Absolutely. But again, do these countries think that they're doing the right thing in influence our children? What am I talking about? our children in colleges and universities. When I'm in my 50s, my kids are out of the college age. So now I'm starting to think grandchildren. Holy cow, do I feel old. Wow. Think about that. How are you? Are you okay with other countries financing the education of your children, especially if they have a hidden agenda? Now, Qatar finances terrorism. It supports terrorism. China supports communism. And again, I said Saudi Arabia, the things that they have supported. Can we trust any of these people, any of these countries? And the answer should be no. Whenever another country or an organization gives money to a college, there is a purpose and intent of influence. What do they want from that? It's very rare you find a donor who wants nothing. I have a hard time believing a country such as Qatar is giving financially and wants nothing in return. What do they want? What do they want? What do they expect? These are things that have to be known. It has to become public. Under President Trump, there was an attempt to make that a requirement. Is that continuing now? Nope. Think about it. Think about that heavily. This is something that we need to be looking at. Again, this is talking about an Islamic information requirement. I mean, again, it could be changing what your children learn. It could be changed. I mean, what you were taught in a college might not be the same thing as a result of this financing. It could be hiding stuff. Now, my next article has to do with misinformation, courtesy of the Associated Press. I want to read you the fake and the false article. Again, this has to do with the Associated Press, but they're hiding of facts related to terrorism and Islamic terrorism. Why would the news hide information that is important? I have questions. I think you should too. Let me read you the article that was by the Associated Press. It came out October 29th. It was titled, "Dutch Woman Brought to Virginia to Face Terrorism Charges." A Dutch woman charged 7 years ago with raising money for the Somali terrorist group Al-Shabaab had been extradited to the U.S. to face trial. Fariha Hassan, 38, made an initial appearance Friday in the U.S. District Court in Alexandria after being brought to the United States on Thursday on charges of conspiring to provide material support to terrorist organization. She was ordered held pending her next hearing. Prosecutors say Hassan helped raise money by telling donors it would fund schools and orphans when it actually was going to terrorists. The indictment alleges that Al-Shabaab cells in Nairobi, Kenya, and Hargeisa, Somalia, received payments over a period of 2011 through 2014. She faces to 15 years in prison if convicted. 15 years in prison here in the States. Is she a Dutch woman? No. She is not from the Netherlands. You want to know where she's from? She's from Kenya. She was a refugee from Kenya. She got citizenship in the Netherlands. Why did Associated Press hide this from you? Well, then it would be Islamic terrorism. Duh, we're talking about Islamic terrorism. Why was it important to hide the nationality? They wanted to defame the Netherlands? Or they don't want to talk about the hijra that is changing Europe? See, those are a couple of things they're trying to hide. Europe is becoming Islamic. This is crazy. Again, if you have visited Europe and you've seen this, you understand this is why Associated Press is hiding this. Again, here's a question I have. Why are we prosecuting her here? She was in the Netherlands. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. Maybe the idea would be to simply send her back to Kenya to live and just ban her from coming here. But with Joe Biden's rule, she could simply walk over the Mexican border and be okay. But again, think about that. Why, if Associated Press is lying to you, they write a lot of the news that is shared on TV. They write a lot of the news that is shared in newspapers and shared on radios. Why are they out there purposely misinforming you? These are questions you have to be asking. Can't, if you can't trust a source, what do you need to do? Find another one. That's the problem. It's why I'm doing what I do. Why I'm sharing. I wish there was another thing out there that we could find to trust. I'm recommending right now a few sources. I like One American News Network. I like them. I sometimes like Fox. I don't always. I do like Jihad Watch. I like a few others. I like the original articles, finding the information. Here's another surprise. This comes out of the UK. Mother of Manchester Arena, Jihad mass murder, if you remember that. Manchester Arena mass murder that happened there. This, the mother of the child who did this. She's received more than $23,000 in UK benefits after leaving the country. Was that a payment? What was the purpose of that? I like Robert Spencer because he's pretty much off the cuff and says what he thinks. He writes this, Lord, what fools these infidels be. Non-Muslims paying for the upkeep of Muslims is a Quranic dictate. Surah 9:29. Fight those who believe in Allah, nor the last day, nor the hidden, which have been forbidden by Allah and his messenger, nor acknowledge the religion of truth, even if they are of the people of the book, until they pay the jizya with willing submission and feel themselves subdued. Again, that's Quran 9:29. Spencer continues, the Caliph Umar said the jizya payments from the dhimmis were the source of Muslims' livelihood. He wrote, quote, Nere Juwarian bin Kudama al-Atami. Tamimi, we said to Umar bin al-Khattab, O chief of the believers, advise us, he said. I advise you to fulfill Allah's convention made with the dhimmis, as is the convention of your prophet and the source of the livelihood of your dependent. Taxes from the dhimmis. That comes from Bukhari 453, 388. So let's think. What did Anjum Chowdhury, the UK jihad preacher, say? He said, we are on jihad seekers allowance. We take the jizya protection money paid to Muslims by non-Muslims, which is ours anyway. The normal situation is to take money from the kafir, isn't it? So this is the normal situation. They give us the money, you work. Give us the money. Allah Akbar, he says, we take the money. Hopefully there is no one from the DSS listening. But you see, people will say you are not working. But the normal situation is for you to take money from the kufar. So we take jihad seekers allowance. Is that what that was? That payment of $23,000? Anyone explain that? That's actually 17,000 euros. Think about that. 17,000 euros given to her, about 2,500 euros a month for housing and child benefits after she left the country. Do they not know what they're doing? Why would you pay the parents? Again, you have to sit there and go, how stupid, how ridiculous how unbelievable things are real. They are shocking. Some of these things you just stick, why? This next one I'm going to share is about something that's happened in India. And this is a concern that I have, and I talk about quite a lot, which is forced conversions. This again comes from Jihad Watch. It's an article that came out November 1st by Ashlyn Davis. He writes, Ashlyn Davis writes, another case of grooming jihadis has been reported from Zugarhi in Uttar Pradesh, where a Muslim doctor feigned a Hindu identity to trap a minor Hindu girl, rape her repeatedly, and force her conversion to Islam. While such cases have not been unheard of in India, a secular country infested with Islamists, versus say Muslims, this incident is unnerving, considering the fact that a doctor involved is involved in such a practice. The victim's mother alleges that Dr. Masroor, a Muslim, introduced himself as Dr. Amit, employed with the district hospital, to groom her 16-year-old daughter, who was a student in class 12. He would follow her to college and wait there, pretending to be in love with her. At one point, the girl complained of rashes on her hand. Masroor invited her to his room on the pretext of offering treatment. He would then regularly coerce her into his house and give her drugs, rape her, and film the entire act. His family also played along. Until finally, they succeeded in deceiving the girl into religious conversion. They had managed to procure counterfeit IDs for the victim, showing that she was of marriageable age as well. While the mother of the girl claims that her daughter was born in 2005, documents produced by the masseur and his family show the year as 2003. In October 25, the victim's family learned that their daughter was masseur. When they had arrived at his place, they found her lying unconscious. Masroor admitted to having administered medication and having converted her to Islam. Tim's mother opposed the conversion and threatened to call the police. Sensing danger, Masroor threatened to kill both of them and fled. The station house officer, Inspector Shrikant Dwedi, has affirmed that the victim party had lodged a report of rape and grooming jihad against Dr. Masroor, a.k.a. Bina Begum Matloof, the brother of the doctor, and three other unidentified individuals. The girl was taken for medical exam and efforts to apprehend the accused are ongoing. I should think about that. This is almost a daily occurrence in Pakistan. It's happening in India. Will it be happening in your neighborhood, where tens of thousands of Muslims have decided that they would come here thanks to Joe Biden taking them out of Afghanistan? Will they decide that they can forcibly convert your daughters? And I refer to what I read earlier about hatred and Islam. And if you want more information on that particular topic, please, again, pick up my book, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad, on Amazon. I'm not trying to go out and sell and promote just me. There's a lot of other people out there, but this stuff is shocking. It's abhorrent and all too real. Some of it, you don't know what to do besides ask why. I mean, why do people not know these things? Why does the media keep you from knowing these things? These are things I have serious, serious concerns about. What do we do to stop this? My only thoughts right now are I wish there was a way we could remove Mr. Dementia. There is a 25th Amendment that should be utilized. I thought it would be utilized last month. I honestly thought it was going to be utilized last month. It may still be done. Apparently they have plans and has not been done. The 25th Amendment, for those of you who are unaware, in the United States, It's a medical removal of the sitting president. There are reasons for this. And with the current Congress we have, it may never be done. I don't know. My last piece here has to do with stuff that's been happening in New Zealand. And this is kind of an ongoing piece. I say ongoing because if you're paying attention, this one is a little old, but at the same time, it's fresh. This article came out on Monday. It's by rnz.co.nz. New charges for teen accused of death threats to non-Muslims by Jean Bell. A 19-year-old accused of threatening to kill non-Muslims is facing multiple fresh charges of possessing objectionable publications. Oh, what could that person be reading? The teenager was arrested days after the Lynn Mall terror attack, charged with threatening to kill members of the Auckland community who were non-Muslim between July 13th and the 7th of September. This person also faces two charges of supplying objectionable publication in August. The man appeared in the North Shore District Court via audiovisual link from custody this morning. Again, that was on Monday. The lawyer, Peter Siddell, entered a not guilty plea. Court heard today the man was also facing six additional charges of possessing objectionable material. The man was granted continuing interim suppression and remanded in custody until a case review on January 19th of this coming year. Why don't you think about that? Objectionable material. It's a very vague term. Could that be the Quran? Probably not. Could it be citations of the Quran? Could it be Said Qutb's milestones? Oh, yeah, we're getting closer. What is he talking about? Stuff that promotes jihad and hatred? Now, I started out talking about hatred, and I'm ending the show talking about hatred that is Islamic. What I want to tell you is that there is love out there from Christ alone. Again, he died on the cross for you, for your sins, while you and I were still sinners. He did this because he loves us, not for any other reason. So the question is, what will you do with that information? The Christian God is a God that gives you choices, and that's how he deems love. He gives you the choice. Something to think about. In Islam, you don't necessarily have a choice because he hates the unbeliever. What do you do with things you hate? Think about that. There's a huge difference there. There is an awful lot happening today. My encouragement here is that you get informed. You stay informed. You fight to stay informed. Where am I telling you to look? Right now, I'm going to hope that you can watch, go look up Dr. Peter McCullough. Read some of the stuff that he's put out. Watch some of his videos. If you want to stay informed on the vaccine, which is really gene therapy. I'm also going to recommend that you subscribe to things like Epic Times. I am finding that I really like them, and I'm finding that my subscription is worth it. It's nice to be able to say that. Would I trust CNN today? No. Would I trust MSNBC or any of the other alphabet soup news groups out there? No. Would I trust Associated Press after I just revealed that they're lying to you? No. I've actually told people, P is written for sheep. Why would I say something like that? Because they have no problem lying to you. So the question is, why do news sources trust other news sources that lie? They have to know. I've always told people when somebody lies to you, stop listening to them. You know, it's one thing when they turn around and apologize to you and say I was wrong and I shouldn't do that. But if they continue on as if they never did, you have a problem. Stop trusting those sources that lie to you, using them. They are not trustworthy. It takes you to stop, to turn off that button, to just not listen, to encourage others to seek places where they can find truth. It's up to you. Now, I'm about to sign off, but I want to say this. It's, again, if you live in the New York State area, if you live in Western New York, there is a great Iron Sharpens Iron Men's Conference coming up. I will be at that. I'm one of the vendors, sharing my books and promoting the ministry, selling and doing as much as I can to tell the truth. It's your turn. Get out there, share the truth. I'm going to recommend that you listen to a great many people here on Global Patriot Radio, and as well to Southern Sense, and listen to Annie. She's an outstanding host who I know personally and can highly recommend. She is one rare gem, so definitely you want to listen. Tomorrow we have Dr. Andrew Harrod, and he's on around noon. You definitely want to come listen to Global Patriot Radio for that. We also have on Saturday, we have Usama Dakdok and Christy Johnson. I may be in the background this Saturday. We'll see. Definitely have to listen to them. They are on at 10 o'clock a night in Eastern time. Definitely interesting and a place where you can do a lot of learning. On Sunday and Tuesday, we have Erica Kafiristan. His show, I recommend listening to and viewing on YouTube. I'm not going to recommend listening to him on Blog Talk Radio for one reason, is that there are visuals that get shown that you just miss out on the good stuff when you're only seeing, you're only listening to the audio. So if you get a chance to listen to him on Sunday or Tuesday, you definitely want to do that. On Monday, we have the real radio man, Alan Vito. Vito Esposito show. You definitely want to come back, listen. Again, that's at 6 o'clock on Monday, 6 p.m. on Monday. And on Wednesday, we have Hank with Polysports. Some of these people are just the best and outstanding in what they do. Next week, I have a couple surprises. I'm hoping to have multiple surprises. We'll see. If everything goes right, I think you will be shocked. I'm hoping to have a couple of great interviews to share with you. And I'll give you a report of how this, my first big local promotion has gone of the Sutliffian Report. I want to say thank you for listening. It's been great sharing. It's always hard for me to share stuff on Islam and hatred. Again, that's because when you grow up in an environment where there's love, it's hard to think about those other things. Environment where there's love, God bless you. When you're forced to live in an environment where there's hate, my suggestion is to vacate. I don't think that's good for anyone. I want to say thank you for listening. God bless you. Goodbye.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see your glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Here comes Sam, put your name at the top of his list, and the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist, and the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you. I brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue. Sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list, and the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist, and the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be hell when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you. All brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue.